I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on. Hello, everybody. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and welcome to Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Well, today I've decided to ask two of my good friends here that you're all very familiar with, Jack Rock and Roll Race Car Patterson here and Bill Dallas, the man of faith, to sit in with me on the opening segment because I want to talk about something that Chasing Justice was founded to concern itself with law enforcement type of things, our military, good guys and girls, patriots across the country, and sometimes we get lost in the world of politics and what that all means to us. So we're going to focus a little bit here in this first segment on some of those innately American things, patriotism. And what does it mean to be a patriot? It's the brand new part of the year. We have a new Congress. We have a lot going on. We see our government in action, or in the case of the shutdown, in action. And it leads us to some thoughts about patriotism. And what does it mean to be a good American? Does it mean to be a good American to fight against things that are going on? Does it make you a good American to resist what you don't believe in? I mean, we look at our friends on the left and their whole thing is to resist and go after our president. Is that patriotic? I think the argument can be made that it might be wrongheaded, in my opinion, to behave that way. But is it patriotic? Do we stand up for what we believe, even if it's uncomfortable? Isn't that what our Constitution gives us the right to do? To stand up and say what we believe and, you know, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. We can be wrong, in our opinion, doesn't mean people have to listen, but we have the opportunity to stand up and say what we mean. So, Jack, welcome aboard here to segment one.
Hey, Joe, it's great to be here with you today.
Thank you very much. And Big Bill, how are you?
I'm great, Joe, really great.
And first of all, I want to say, Bill, thank you for your service, because I know you are a veteran. Bill was a Vietnam-era veteran, and all our Vietnam friends out there, this show is dedicated to you. You know, I see a thing that pops up on social media all the time that talks about the Vietnam War, how all the men and women who served there served in a conflict that was not approved of by the American people, and when they came home, they were not appreciated, and they were not. So we here at Chasing Justice are going to dedicate this segment to all the Vietnam veterans who were with us out there, and to say thank you for your service. It was valuable what you did. It was a noble cause that you went to serve your country. When you got the call from your country, you went forward and you did your duty. Many of your friends died on battlefields. You left them behind and it was difficult for you. We are a grateful nation for that. And shame on everyone who came before us who didn't say that. So here at Chasing Justice, we're saying thank you. What you did was important. So, Jack, I think you had some information. You wanted to, a list you came up with, right, of something?
What's this list? Growing up, I was surrounded by veterans in my family. Of many different wars, including Vietnam. And I've compiled a list here of what we do not owe veterans. And let me run it down for you
Hang on one second. Let's be clear. This is a list of things we don't owe
that
to them.
That we don't owe to veterans.
Okay, so for their service, we don't owe you this, veterans.
This, exactly. Okay. And that's it. That's what we don't owe the veterans of this fine country.
Very clever, Jack. So your list there that consisted of nothing means, really, we owe them everything.
Absolutely. I mean, the very fact that we're walking, talking, we're Americans, we're living in a free society, we owe all of that to all the veterans from day one of the founding of this nation.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, I think that's been lost. When do you hear about this anymore? When do we really talk about patriots? It's almost a bad thing now to be patriotic. Can you imagine? Do you think you'd ever see that day, Bill?
Well, let me tell you, President Kennedy's inaugural address, he said, and I quote, "Let every nation know, whether it wishes us well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe in order to assure the survival and the success of liberty." Now, that came from John F. Kennedy. Now, it's hard to imagine what it would be like to live in a country without freedom, without the right to wave a flag, assemble peaceably, or even speak our minds. Patriotism is such a small word for such a big responsibility. You know, it's not a short and frenzied outburst of emotion, according to Adlai Stevenson, but the tranquil and steady dedication of a lifetime. You know, right after 9/11, we were a very patriotic nation. Flags flew everywhere, from your cars, from big trucks, apartment balconies, yards, porches. And you don't see that today. So was it a short and frenzied outburst? I saw something in an article that moved me really amazingly. He was a brother. I did not know him. I'm saying he was a brother veteran, a Vietnam veteran who was wounded. He was actually blinded. And here's what he had to say about the American patriot and the flag. He said, "I can only hear Old Glory whispering in the wind as it proudly waves in front of my home. In my mind's eye, I can still visualize our sacred symbol covering coffins of fellow Vietnam veterans and being ceremoniously handed to their grieving loved ones as the bugle echoes taps. And in my heart, I know this flag unifies our country and symbolizes the blood that runs through the veins of our nation." Now that was quoted by a Sergeant Shaft. That's the name he uses. His real name is John Fales. He uses that in a publication that he writes. Now, everyone has always been patriotic to some degree or another. Even back in 1917, President Woodrow Wilson said, "This flag, which we honor and under which we serve, is the emblem of our unity, our power, our thought and purpose as a nation. It has no other character than that which we give it from generation to generation." So I say, let's keep those flags flying.
You know, it's interesting. You see them, they go through periods where you see more flags flying around the neighborhood. Now, I put up a flag a couple years ago because I believe in flying my flag. I have pride in my country. It's not the flag. I am not worshiping a flag. A flag, to me, that red, white, and blue represents those men and women. Jack, as you said, since the beginning, since the founding, the people who were willing to take the sacrifices to make something greater than themselves. And it was sacrifice. There's no doubt. When you look at the forefathers, what they went through, what they had to pledge and give up, they were wealthy people. For them to pledge their lives, their fortunes, and their family honor to create this country was no simple thing. And every generation after has had to take up that mantle and sacrifice for this country to be what it is so that we can sit at this table on Chasing Justice and talk about it.
And that also goes for all the men and women who served during peacetime also. Right. I mean, they gave up large pieces of their youth to serve their country before they started their lives, while other people that they were in high school with or started college with continued on and built a career and a life for themselves. They postponed that to serve their nation, and I think they deserve as much gratitude.
You're absolutely right. Everyone who served their country in under uniform is absolutely an American hero. Yeah. Billy, you got something else here.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment on the veterans again and how much that they mean to this country. Because thanks to our veterans, our freedom's been protected, but not without a price, as we all know. When called to serve, they left home and family for remote, desolate places. They put their lives on the line to preserve that heritage, that precious freedom, and the freedom of countless other nations, not just ours. Now, it's the veteran, not a reporter, who's given us the freedom of the press. It's the veteran, not the politician, who's given us the right to vote. It's the veteran, not the lawyer, who's given us a right to a fair trial. It's the veteran, not a poet, who's given us the freedom of speech. It's the veteran, not the campus organizer, who's given us the freedom to assemble. And it's the veteran, not the preacher, the pastor, or the priest, who has given us freedom of religion. This man by the name of Herschel Frazer from Louisiana, he wrote a poem, and he ended it with this last verse. He said, "So when you see a veteran, speak to him with pride. Remember your freedom, many thousands died. Shake his hand and salute him. Have a kind word to say, for when you see a veteran, you see the USA. I think that says it all.
It really does.
American veterans are special.
They really are, and we can't thank them enough. And I am saddened by the fact that we see these recent polls where so many of our young people are now saying that socialism is a better way to go than the traditional American values. And what scares me, not so much for me, because we're going to weather this storm. We're going to get through this. But if these are what the young people in their 20s are thinking, 20s and teens and high school and college kids, they are going to take over the world in the next 40 years. And it's the country that they're going to inherit that all of these veterans provided for us, that they're going to take, and what are they going to do with it? What are they going to do when the mantle is handed to them?
Well, to their credit, we have a huge military force, and it's all volunteer. We don't have a draft. So, you know, this generation is stepping up to a point. But just like anything else, it's the veterans that have been in it for longer than anybody else. Sure.
And I'm going to paraphrase Reagan when he said one time, freedom, you know, it's only free until you can keep it, until you lose it. It's one generation away from losing freedom. Mm-hmm. And now you see that. I never thought that I would see that generation. But here's a potentially, it's right in front of us when we see, you know, polls like this, when people talk about these kind of things. So, Jack, let me ask you, if you had to describe a patriot, a modern patriot, what would you call a modern patriot?
You know, let's put it in very simplistic terms. I mean, somebody, of course, and obviously is pro-American, but somebody who's willing to listen, because we have to have discourse in this country. And right now, that has been blocked. Has been blocked by the liberals who won't listen to anything from a right-sided or conservative viewpoint. And I think being a patriot is being able to listen and being to understand, adapt, and come to some kind of an agreement, come to some kind of understanding of each other and what we need as a whole.
I like that, Jack, be able to communicate. A patriot is one who takes the traditional roles and ideas of what patriotism means, what it means, everything, Bill, you said in those poems, what it means to be selfless and what it means to be concerned about your neighbor and your family. But part of it, we have to be able to talk, because it's okay to disagree. It is absolute. Matter of fact, we get nowhere if everybody just agrees and shakes our head. We have to disagree, but how do you converse about that?
That's my point. That's the basis of this country. The Continental Congress didn't sit down and everybody said, hey, yeah, that's a great idea. Come on, everybody vote yes. No, they argued, they fought, and they argue and fight today. And it's that discourse that has to remain open for us to proceed as a nation.
You're right. You know, go ahead, Billy.
You know, a quote by President Reagan. He had said, no arsenal or no weapon in the arsenals of the world is so formidable as the will and moral courage of free men and women.
I love Ronald Reagan. He was a tremendous individual. He was from a different generation. He was more of a traditional American. So I look and I say, what caused this little bit of a shift? Is it because we have too much? What do we worry about now? What do these young people have to worry about? They have everything. Is that something that kind of takes their eye off the ball of what it means to be free? They don't talk about freedom. These kids don't talk about freedom. Now, for my son Jack and his friends, the fam that we've met here on Chasing Justice, they do talk about these things. They are my hope for the future. They are wonderful young men who really are considered, they consider themselves patriots, and they talk about these things. They're trying to change their generation, I suppose, and I'm hoping that they're successful. But when I look and I say, is it because these people have too much? I mean, when I was a kid, Christmas, you got some stuff. We didn't get it the rest of the year. I don't know how many of you out there, but we ask our kids, what do you want for Christmas? And I don't know. Because they have everything. They get stuff all the time. Does that change your perspective on what it means to be American, understand this freedom?
You know what helps me understand that? Is I saw a picture of your son, Jack, with some of his friends around the dinner table, holding hands and praying before their meal. That, to me, is a solid basis that gives them the moral courage to go up against those naysayers and things like that. And these are the guys that will be coming up into the mill. We're going to be talking about them in the future as veterans. I can see that now. You know, it's your son is a great example of what I hope the future holds for
me too, Bill. And that picture they took, that was an organic moment where it was the fam, the guys just hanging around, and they decided to say a prayer before their meal. I thought it was a beautiful thing. Mm. And Jack is a funny kid. He goes off to high school, to a public high school, and he wears a T-shirt with a picture of Ronald Reagan on it, and it says, "I smell hippies." And I tell him, "Jack, you know, you may have to fight your way out of the building when you see that, but the reality is none of the kids in the school know who Ronald Reagan is. So to them, they don't know he could be a rock star. They don't know who this guy is, and they don't know what that means." One of the things, I think we only have a minute or so left here. I'm going to look back, and as we talk about veterans and the Vietnam veterans, an experience that I had as a young person, and I want to just tell this story out there. I don't even remember how old I was at the end of the Vietnam War when all the soldiers were coming home, 72?
72.
73.
72, sorry, I was probably 10 years old. And I know it was a big time. It was on TV. You know, you saw it every night, the airplanes full of young men and women coming home. And I saw some of the interactions in the airports, and I saw how people treated these Vietnam veterans. Mm-hmm. And I was, I don't know, I didn't understand it as a kid, because to me, Army guys, you know, we played G.I. Joe. Army guys were the greatest guys in the world. You know, World War II was only 15, 16 years earlier, you know, for me. When I was a kid, we learned about it in school, and they were heroes. And to see what happened when they came home and how they were treated, even at 10 years old, was disconcerting. I didn't quite understand. So I remember asking my dad, saying, "Hey, you know, why aren't they treating them nice? Aren't they Army guys?" And my father said, "Yes, they are. They're all heroes, every single one of them. And people just didn't think that this was the right war to be in, and therefore they're not treating them properly. And that's why you're seeing that on TV." And I found that unfair. I didn't understand. I was a 10-year-old kid. 10-year-old kids don't understand these kind of things. But I remember right down the corner from my house, there was a great big billboard put up on a family around the corner. And it said, "Welcome home." Mm-hmm. And I remember driving by, and I'm going, "Welcome home." Stanley was the boy's name. "Welcome home, Stanley." And I'm like, "Welcome home? Where's he coming home from?" And when you looked at it, it said "from Vietnam" at the bottom. And I'm going, "Whoa, hey, I know his brother, his little brother. He's a year younger than me, but Stanley's in Vietnam. He's one of them guys coming home. This is really great." So I went home, and as a dopey, innocent kid, I said, "Hey, they're good guys and girls." So I made a thank you note for Stanley, and I showed my parents, and they took me down there to the house. And they knocked on the door. I said, "Hi, how are you? Our son over here wants to say thank you to Stanley." Well, his parents were dumbfounded. They brought me in, and they said, "Stanley, you want to come up here? This kid wants to say something to you." And I come up, and I saw Stanley, and he was, I don't know, maybe 22, 23 years old. And I talked to him, and I said, "Hey, I saw the poster outside, and I thank you. You're a hero." And I gave him this note, you know, "Thank you for serving our country and for keeping me free and my family," this and that. And Stanley kneeled down, took the paper, and started crying. Mm. And I didn't understand why he was crying. His parents were crying. My parents were crying. It was a strange thing. And we ended up ending on a nice note. Stanley gave me a beautiful pillowcase that had a tiger on it, said Vietnam. And it was really wonderful. And we left. And later on, you know, talking with my dad, he goes, "Stanley was one of those kids that came home after fighting for their country, and he was treated badly. You saying thank you must have meant a lot to him." With the wisdom of time has gone by now, I can only imagine that having gone through that, having an innocent little kid come to you and say thank you, not because it was me, but any innocent little kid coming and saying thank you, had to be powerful. So that's what we want to say here on Chasing Justice as we end here. Thank you to all our Vietnam veterans. What you did was valuable. You are important. You are American heroes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Same here.
We'll be back on Chasing Justice.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutLoud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice here in the America Out Loud Radio Network. Well, here we are in round two, and I have the gentleman here from the neighborhood. Everybody is here. Everybody's fired up. Bill's feeling good this week. He was down there with a little bit of a cold for a while. So I hope everybody out in Chasing Justice land is feeling well also. We have a lot to talk about. There's a lot going on in our country, and we're going to try and get to a lot of it today to see what we can get here and talk about. So first of all, I'd like to welcome everybody. We got the rock and roll race car Jack Patterson here. Jack, how are you?
Hey, Joe. Great to be here.
Excellent. Of course, the aforementioned man of faith, Bill Dallas. How are you, Billy?
I'm feeling great, Joe, and faithful as always.
And you know, and when you smile, you light up the room. And then we have Jim. Hi, Jim, the contrarian. You're down. Jim, how are you?
How you doing, Joe?
No cursing this week,
I hope? No.
We're going to try and keep that under control. Excellent. And I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. So, gentlemen, there's a lot going on out there sitting around our campfire here with our cup of coffee talking about our country. The shutdown continues to grind on. We have the government shut down. I don't know, is anybody here actually noticing that in any way, shape, or form?
I'm not feeling it in my own life. My contention has always been to get away from all this, to ease all the troubles. I still believe that it should have been put to a vote. We go back to somebody who wasn't very popular with a lot of people, but he had some good ideas during his run, which was Ross Perot, who said, let's do a town hall. Let's open these things up to a vote. Let's see what the American people themselves actually want, because the couple of representatives that we now have to cover all these people in America are just not enough to carry the voice of the people.
Right. Well, if we look, we would say that the election was that. I mean, Trump gave us a choice and we voted for those things. And now the other party, who's been trying for 2 years to stop him, make him illegitimate, to destroy his presidency so that we don't get what we voted for.
But we can all abide by the decision made by the American people as to whether or not we want to give money to build the wall.
But Jack, we have a representative form of government. So what you're advocating is to change the form of government into basically
a direct democracy.
Yes, by petition.
I understand, Jim, and I don't disagree with you. And I know that there's a lot of repercussions that come along with that. But when it comes to major decisions such as this, I still honestly believe we can open this up to a vote.
Or maybe we
should.
All right. Well, think about this now. They've shut down the government, and who's really getting hurt by this? Not a lot of the ordinary people, but the government workers, the guys that are the park police, the trash collectors, these guys. Why is it that the politicians aren't suffering the same kind of things? Why do they get paid? They're government employees just like these guys. Why? You know what? If they were having to lose their pay, guaranteed, they would sit down and in 3 hours they'd have this thing resolved.
First of all, Bill, no government employee in the past history has lost their pay. Yes, there's some people who live paycheck to paycheck, and I get it. They're going to struggle through these times, but basically they're on extended vacation. And then as soon as the government gets put back into play, the Congress always votes to give them back pay.
Right, we know that's the history. They will get their money, but you're right. Some people, I have a cousin who is a government worker, and unfortunately, not getting a paycheck. This is the first week that he actually didn't get a paycheck, but they are standing strong because he has something to do with immigration, and he says the wall is absolutely necessary for the American people, for our country to be safe, and he's willing to hold out as long as they possibly can, and they are going paycheck to paycheck, basically, and right now this is the first check they're not getting.
And Joe, I'm glad that you made that clear, because a lot of the news media has led people to believe that the paychecks were cut from day one, and they were not. This is the first week for many, if not all, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, this past Friday is the first paycheck that any government worker didn't get. Now, granted, they got their last check 2 weeks ago, because I believe they get paid every 2 weeks. So right. The last money they actually got was 2 weeks ago. Right after Christmas, probably a day or so after Christmas in that week. So now they've gone 2 weeks without pay, and it doesn't look like they're going to get it. So it's difficult. So if you know somebody who is a government worker, a man or a woman who's out there feeding their family by working for us in our government, and they're not getting paid, bring them over for dinner. help them out. If they're standing strong to try and help us, that's the least I think we can do. The wonderful Miss Kathy suggested that we do a GoFundMe page for the workers that don't have a pay, and so that they can have their dinner and hang out. But the whole idea of this shutdown, the other thing I think that you were talking about there, Bill, you know, why they get paid. Well, they exempt themselves from everything. They exempt themselves from the health care law. They didn't have to have Obamacare, the people in the Congress. I remember we had a town hall here with Mr. Pallone, who's a local congressman, and I was lucky enough to be in the line to ask a question. And it was, people were very upset when this Obamacare was coming in. And my question to him was, you are exempt. You and your family are not going to have to live by this Obamacare. You specifically wrote it into the bill that Congress is exempt, as in most laws they write, they are exempt from those laws. Why don't you pledge to us right now that you and everybody in Congress will have the same exact health care as us? And he bumbled and he stumbled, and next he never really actually answered the question. And guess what? That was the last question of the day. And that was the end of the program. Yeah. But they exempt themselves from this, just like they do many other things, so that they don't have to suffer the slings and arrows of those that they rule over.
And that's how they can get away with all this and not have to suffer the same consequences that the ordinary guy working stiff has to suffer.
So what do we do? If you are out there and you believe that we need the wall to protect our country, to keep drugs from coming in, to keep human trafficking from happening, because it is happening. These things are real. You talk to the Border Patrol agents and they will tell you all of this is real. The border is needed. We have to secure our border. I think Obama's DHS guy was actually on and they thought he was going to jump on and bash everybody. And he came out and said, oh no, this is a crisis. This is a problem. They're worried about President Trump now declaring this a crisis and using emergency money to build the wall. So now they're all getting out in front of it. Oh, this is not a crisis. It's not a crisis. It's not a crisis. Well, this guy says it was, and Obama said it was a crisis.
And let's not forget, Joe, and everybody else out there, please don't forget, all of these Congress people who are opposing this did vote yes for the Secure Fence Act. That was quite a while ago, but they did vote for it, and they have all spoken out for it in the past that there needs to be a border, a physical border, and many of them have used the exact words physical border, including Mr. Schumer.
Sure. Now, along that line, I think I understand the idea that, you know, the wall, if it's secure enough, if it's high enough, it's big enough that people can't get over it, you're going to funnel them to the great big beautiful doors that the Trump presidency has declared we need to have, which is right. We need to have immigration, but you have to do it legally. Everyone that's thinking about this has said that immigration is great. It's part of what we are. It's part of all of our histories. But if it's not done legally, the problem you're going to have is you're going to have other things coming across that border. All you can do is walk across the border. There's so much area without fencing. How many people, how many bodies do they find on the property of these farmers and ranchers where people are coming across that desert? It's 110 degrees. They're stuck there for days with no food and water, and they're dying in the desert. What's that life worth? Well, that's worth nothing because they tried to get here? No, so they made the farmers set up water stations on their property so that the people sneaking across can have water. Now, that's a humanitarian thing to do, but how about we block the border so people don't come across that way? They have to come through the door and they have to do it correctly. I think that's the right way to do all of this when we look at who's going to come across. Now, will the wall actually work? So I think Jim has some information on that, but I'm going to tell you, did anybody see the Jim Acosta report? Jim Acosta, the thorn in the side of the Trump administration. He goes down to one of the parts of the wall that is very strong, very powerful, very tall, where nobody can get across. And he does a report going, the wall is unnecessary. I see no one trying to get across here. There are no people here. No one's climbing over the fence. We don't have to worry about this. Inadvertently, making Trump's point. With a big, beautiful wall that people can't get over, you have nobody coming across. Which, I don't know that was his plan, but he made it crystal clear. A wall does work.
I think Trump actually tweeted that's the purpose of the wall. There's nobody coming across because the wall works.
I think he thanked him. Hey, thanks, Jim. You know, they finally got along. They had a moment of coming together. But does the wall work? So, Jim, you had some information about walls.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Throughout history, the United States and United Nations have supported walls. And just to mention a few, there's a wall between Israel and West Bank that works extremely well. There's one between Morocco and Algeria that works extremely well. Cyprus, India, Pakistan. These are all the walls that Turkey, Syria. All these walls work, which incidentally, the United States taxpayer has subsidized most of these walls. So why all of a sudden, a measly $5.7 billion, and you know, $1 billion, but we have bridges to nowhere in this country. Sure. Why all of a sudden it's $5.7 billion for something that's been proven to work, a big deal?
Well, I think it's very clear, just like, and when I bring this up, and I want people to, in Chasing Justice Land, to get my point of view, is that we, most of us in America, are good, decent people. And we worry about the argument. We worry about the meaning behind it, like people coming here who want a better life. They get us arguing about that, because who can argue about that? Of course they want to come here and have a better life. What is the story really behind that? Do they really care about them having a better life, or are they a nonstop flow of additional voters? So what if we had some legislation tomorrow that says we will legalize all of these people and we'll build the wall and we'll do the DACA, but not one of those people who are illegal will ever have the right to vote in an American election? Do you think they would vote for that? Will they have a better life?
Absolutely not. Democrats lose their big bargaining chip. And
exactly.
That's what it's all about.
So I think somebody said if the illegals that were coming here to America were voting Republican, Chuck and Nancy would be down there mixing the mortar, putting the bricks up themselves to keep people out of the area. So that brings me to a point that we wanted to talk about, Officer Singh, who lost his life right after Christmas. I know we talked a little bit about him last week, but here on Chasing Justice, we're dedicated to law enforcement, military, and people kind of things. And we look at this brave young man who came here legally to our country, and he decided he wanted to be a police officer and serve his community. It was a beautiful thing. And he lost his life to an illegal alien who was here and took his life. It's very, very sad. His family lost out. We all lost out. So my question is, what is the value of one life? How much are we willing to do to save one life? Now, I saw a news report the other day with Geraldo Rivera, and I like Geraldo Rivera. I've come and gone back and forth as a fan, not a fan, over his points of view of things. But the show he was on was trying to get him to recognize the fact that losing Officer Singh, one individual, because of an illegal alien, is very, very important. And Geraldo, his point is, well, there are murders every single day anyway. And because there's murders every single day, you can't stop what's going on down there for people who need to come here because of one murder. And I'm saying, no, one life is important. No matter what else you can say, if that illegal alien guy was not permitted to come into our country, Officer Singh would be alive today, he'd be on patrol, he'd be coming home to kiss his wife and his kid. But instead, he's not. He's lost his life. He is dead. They lost their father and a husband. One life does matter.
If you were to take that gentleman's last name and change it to anyone who is unsupportive of a wall and or border security, it'd be a different story. If the last name of that officer was a Pelosi family member, a Schumer family member, God forbid, you would have a different story. You would have opposition. You would have somebody saying, yeah, that one life was worth putting up a wall. That life was worth more border security because it was a life that I knew and I loved.
Right, and it all comes down to your personal reaction. How about Kate Steinle? We forget all about her. There was Kate's Law, you know, that we were going to do things to help these people. Why is there any pushback from our friends on the left to protect American citizens? We hear them constantly talk about the needs of the poor immigrants who want to come here, the people who want a better life. We hear all about them and their children and why they deserve to come here and be part of our country. How come we don't hear them ever talking about liberty and justice and our rights and our children's rights to have things? Why don't we ever hear a word from that side about that?
For a very short video that happens to be on YouTube, it's fantastic. What somebody did was on Trump's team, let's say, for lack of a better terminology, went into a center on the border and actually filmed a woman, two children, and her husband becoming United States citizens and how excited they were. And it was a wonderful thing to see because all we see is the other side of the coin. Here's a whole family came to the border, sat down, went through the process, and became United States citizens and were absolutely thrilled beyond description to become citizens of America.
Well, that's what Corporal Singh did. He was really a true success story about the American dream. But then he's brought down by this open borders nightmare. Now, he was from Fiji, but he came to this country, and he cherished his family roots back in Fiji. But he embraced the privileges and responsibilities of legally obtained citizenship. Absolutely. And he became an American. And this is precisely why the California Democrats won't even say his name. They won't acknowledge his sacrifice or investigate these policy failures that led to his death. The things that Governor Brown put into law about not being able to report an illegal immigrant status to ICE possibly could have prevented this death.
Of course, this nonsense that the local police are not going to cooperate with the federal police. What happened at 9/11? Let's all draw this all together here. During 9/11, we had agencies that had information about these people that didn't share it with each other, because there's all these fiefdoms in law enforcement. The CIA doesn't talk to the FBI. The FBI doesn't talk to ATF. And then we realized after that horrific tragedy and attack on our country, the information was there. We should have been communicating. Well, now here we have this tragedy going on, and we have police agencies that have information, and the political people are saying, you're not going to cooperate with each other. You are not to tell them, because we think it's more important that the illegal people that are here are protected while they break our laws than for you to report them and have ICE go and remove them. You have movements in this Congress where people are putting bills forward to disband ICE. They're calling ICE killers and murderers. And it's unbelievable. Where are we in this country that this gets to stand for even 1 minute? It's absolutely unbelievable to me.
Well, I think we're playing into the left's narrative. If all immigration was legal and we solved this problem, you're still going to have bad apples getting through. Still going to have bad apples killing people like in every other immigration class throughout.
Or American citizens, because yes. Americans kill each other too. There's no doubt about it.
But the problem is you're not going to have the degree of bad apples, because they're going to be vetted. And no system's going to be perfect. But we're not going to take all the prisoners from Latin America. We're not going to take all the people in the mental institutions.
The gang members.
Throw them over to the United States. So now we have to take care of them. Well, wait a second. We can't take care of the world.
Right. You know, it's interesting. And this is my point, that we got our eyes caught on the decent people who want to come here. And when you talk about Officer Singh, him in the pride in becoming an American, I am proud of him that he did the right thing and wanted to come to this country and be a part of it. That's a wonderful thing. That's a great American story. Mm-hmm. But people that break the law come here, they're trying to distract us. They're getting us to, that's all we talk about is it right to do this? Is it not right? Is it fair? Is it unfair? In the meantime, there's a whole subterfuge and agenda going on behind the scenes trying to do other things with us.
Well, look at those that are opposing the law, opposing the wall. Kamala Harris, the senator, tweeted three times between Christmas and New Year's Eve talking about the plight of illegal aliens and their kids, but not a peep was heard from her about the shooting of Corporal Singh.
You keep wanting to promote the young man.
Yeah, I want to call him a colonel.
Good, decent guy. Well,
even Nancy Pelosi decried the deaths of illegal alien children on the same day that Corporal Singh was murdered. But then she still had time to promote her upcoming MSNBC special.
Right. Well, gentlemen, interesting topics. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in a minute with round three here on Chasing Justice. Let's think about everything we just heard. It's all important. It's your life. It's your country. It's your kids' country.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Chasing Justice here. That was an excellent conversation, gents. I really appreciate that. There's a lot going on here, and we have a lot of passion for this, and I know a lot of the people listening have passion also. So as we move forward, I want to tell you a little bit about True Security Design. This is my company. We do threat evaluations on buildings, schools, businesses. We also do them on individuals now. We do school threat assessments for students, where a district can have us come out and we can train your people how to set up a student threat assessment system so that if a student makes a comment or does something, how do you address that to intervene to protect all the other kids in the school and that kid? So truesecuritydesign.com, take a look. Blue Magazine, there was some excellent articles this past month. If you haven't heard it, my brother and sister law enforcement officers, www.thebluemagazine.com, you want to take a look. There's a lot of great stuff in there for cop stuff. So those are our supporters, and we want to thank them very much for helping us be here each and every week. All right, so on the law enforcement end, we're going to get into that in a minute. The case of Jamie Kloss, this young girl who was kidnapped, and we just found out she's alive, thank God, but what happened to her. But the last thing I want to cover is a little bit about our government as we move forward. We know Ms. Ocasio was elected to Congress. She's an interesting young woman, very attractive. She's well-spoken for her generation. She seems to be someone that they are looking at for future great things in the Democrat Party, which we should all pay very close attention to that. She was working in a bar prior to being elected. I don't hold that against her. You know, one of the original idea of the House of Representatives was that people from all walks of life would come forward and they would serve their country for a 2-year period. Then they'd go back to their job. They'd go back to their real world. They would come forward to work on helping make their own government, their own country better. So I applaud her for getting involved politically. I applaud anyone who wants to come forward and get involved and make things better. But we know there was a video that came out recently of her dancing when she was in college. And I don't know, I read some articles that they're talking about Republicans are going off on her. How dare she make that? She was a college girl and she was dancing. But I couldn't find any actual incidences of Republicans saying anything negative. All I found was news media people complaining how the Republicans didn't like it. I watched the video. She's a pretty girl. She was dancing around with some college kids on a roof. It was fun. You know, I can imagine that they had a good time making that. I don't hold that against the kid either. You know, she's a young person. She wants to be involved. The problem I do have with her is with some of the things that come out of her mouth that she talks about, that if she was ever in charge of anything, we would all have a really big problem. So we see our new Congress bill, right? They just came out. What's the one of the, now here's all these problems going on in the country. We want to keep the economy growing so people can have jobs. We have problems with China who are trying to take advantage of us. We have North Korea who are trying to work that out. We have drugs. We have the problem down on the border. We have all these things going on. And the very first thing they put forward is impeach Trump. Impeach him. We don't have any facts, but we got a bill that says we're going to impeach him.
That seems to be on every Democrat's lips. Anything that is Trump is negative. It's anti. Everything else is okay.
Like the guy can't do anything wrong. Now I get it. I still haven't seen any internment camps. Has he rounded anybody up? Has he attacked anybody? Has he come into anybody's house in the middle of the night? All I see is he's trying to solve the problems we have. But that's just my point of view. So I have an idea. They want to impeach the president. Well, here's what I would like to see then, because I believe that corruption in our government is very costly. Jim, you've said that many, many times. Corruption in the government can hurt us. So why don't we do this? Why doesn't the president set up a special commission and name 4 special prosecutors that are here to do the business of the American people? They will put them in 4 regions of the United States, and their job will be to investigate all the politicians. That's their only job. Go through each politician. And if you know what, Bill, you're the congressman from North Dakota.
You come out clean, you get a good rating. Boy, you did a good job. But we get somebody like, I don't know, Nancy Pelosi, who, what does she make, $174,000 a year? She's there for 30 years. Do the math. What's that, about almost $5 million? She's worth $196 million. How does that happen? I've been at my job a long time. I'm not worth 17,000 times what I made in the past 10 years or 20 years. So I would like to investigate that. Wouldn't that be a good idea?
Yeah. I would like to investigate Ocasio-Cortez, just because I think sometimes we need to be able to give them an IQ test.
The problem is, if we do investigate them, they'd have to arrest almost 90% of the politicians, Republicans and Democrats, because the corruption in this government is so pervasive that it's really the reason why Jack mentioned in the last segment, let's just have votes. And I said, well, we have a representative form of government, but it seems to me that Jack lost faith in the representative form of government, and so have I.
And you know, and you're absolutely right, because we vote for people who tell us they're going to go do things. Then they get there and they don't do it. They seem to do whatever works out good for them. You know, and I get it. You know, I'm not stupid. I've been around here a long time. You see, once you get to Congress, they call you into a room and they say, hey, listen, Bill, you're here for 2 years. This can be a great career for you. This can be a wonderful thing working here in Washington. It's help. If you vote the right way, we'll make sure you have money for your reelection. You might get a better office. You're going to have a better lifestyle. We'll get you to some good fundraisers. You know, that'll be working out great. So then Bill, who promised everybody at home he was going to go and do the right thing, he gets there and goes, wow, I kind of really like working here in Washington, having this nice office and being a somebody. So while I'm against that bill, I'm actually going to vote for it, because if I don't, these guys are going to take this stuff away from me.
Yeah, I got to learn how to play the game.
You got to play the game. Now, do we send people there to play the game, or do we send them there to represent us?
Well, we certainly don't send them there to dance.
And to enrich themselves. So this is where term limits, I think, was something that you can bounce around, and you know, but if you have a really quality person who's there, they should be able to stay there. No. I think we've seen by this point in time that, you know, total power is totally corrupting. You go to the Senate, you get to do 1 6-year bit in the Senate and you're out of there. You go to Congress, you can do 3 times in the House of Representatives and you're out of there. Because they entrench themselves. And when you're entrenched in your entrenched power and you're in charge of things that people are willing to pay money to get things to happen, that's what happens. That's how corruption creeps in.
I mean, why is there a term limit on the presidency and not on Congress or Senate?
The congressmen, in my opinion, just become owned by the lobbyists.
And that's the problem. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens, because then their money is thrown at them, a lifestyle is thrown at them. Who'd want to give that up? Who'd want to give that up? So they come home and tell us what we want to hear, and then they go back and do something else. How many times have these Republicans done that to us in the past 10 years? Mm. They're going to fix it. Then they get there and say, you know what? We're going to kick it down there. After this next election, then we're going to get to it. After the next one, we're going to go after it. And we just keep voting for them. So the other thing that they put out there is they want to change the Electoral College. Now, we heard this initially when Al Gore lost the presidential race to George W. And what happened was the Florida Supreme Court was extremely biased. They had a set of laws in the state of Florida for recounting votes. And every time they recounted and he didn't win, they said, okay, well, we're going to extend it further. Well, that's not the law. You don't just keep extending the law. Who are these guys in black robes, to quote one of my most favorite people, Mark Levin, in the world, is that who are these guys in black robes that decide they're just going to make up the law and change it? No, you can keep counting. No, you can count the chairs. No, the law says you got until this time to do it. Even if I lost, I would say, you know what? That was the law, because I abide by the law. But you don't just keep changing it. Florida did that. And then we said, we have to change this because Al Gore won the most popular votes. So what they want to do now is they want to change because they can't change outright the Electoral College. It's part of our system. But they want to change the way the votes are tabulated so that the person with the most votes, which means whoever wins New York and California, is going to determine for the rest of the country who the president is. So here's my thought. Every single state gets 2 electoral votes. The highest vote getter, the popular vote getter in that state, gets those 2 votes. No splits, no nothing else. And you win California by 1 vote, 57 million to 57 million and 1, you get the 2 votes. And we put them all in a big pile. That makes every state equal. And whoever ends up with, 52, 26, 27 states or 54 points, that's the president of the United States. We don't leave it to the hard number vote count from New York and Los Angeles to determine who our president is. Who gets the most votes from the states?
So Montana gets the same leverage as California.
Yes, it wouldn't make that. Wouldn't that make Montana important?
Oh, yes, it would. But that's not the way the Constitution was written.
Right.
So I don't think that could ever happen.
Now, the point there being is that you have only, you know, certain amount of people in Montana, small amount of people compared to New York or Los Angeles. Why should people in Montana dictate what happens in the country? But isn't that what we call fair? Everyone, every state, because it's about states' rights. Isn't that what really all about?
The whole idea behind voting is every voice counts. Every vote counts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, Jack. All right, so now that we've solved those problems, gents, let's look at something here. What are some things Ms. Ocasio says? What does she talk about?
Well, we all know that she's a anti-gun person. And when a reporter asked her about that, her quote was, "Owning a gun is not a right." And it kind of like set the reporter off. He goes, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, if it was, it would be in the Constitution."
And that's like the 229th Amendment. It was easy to miss.
Oh, my. And that's what I said before. Now, you were talking about her being a dancer or a bartender or whatever it was, worked in a bar. You know, but in all fairness, look at Obama. He was a bagger and a cart guy in a supermarket. So, you know, anybody, to be fair, anybody can move up the ladder in politics, no matter how bright you are or how
not so
Ocasio you are.
Okay. And I just think her ideas, and I don't know her personally, I find her to be, you know, energetic and fun. It's all really nice. But her ideas, just like Obama, he seemed like a nice enough guy. His ideas were dangerous. They damaged our country. And her ideas, 70% tax rate. Well, what do they say? If you confiscated all the money of the people in the top 20% of the country, you could run the government until May. Then where are they going to go for the rest of the money?
That's socialism.
They're going to come to the rest of us, and they're going to say, "Oh, now you're 70% on you, Bill. Who should know?" That is ridiculous.
Only if the politicians take a pay cut.
Well, you know, that's something you mentioned earlier on the other segment. You know, if they didn't have their pay during this shutdown, they would think. Do you think Nancy Pelosi, who's worth $196 million, which we don't know how she got that money, think she cares about $174,000? That's lunch to her. Hey. You know, these people don't worry about money the way you and I worry about money.
Then that $5 billion shouldn't worry about her. She said, "I wouldn't pay more than a dollar for the wall." Well, let her pay it. Let her see how much she would give.
Now, it's funny. I would wonder if they would say that, if there could be some loophole in there. See, a good lawyer like my son Joe, who's the lawyer of record here for Chasing Justice. Be interesting if she actually said to be spiteful and put in a bill and let people sign it for a dollar for the wall. If the president could say, "Well, like there's $40,000 toilet seats, now there's a $5 billion overrun. Oh, well, build the wall, and we got to get the money." Because it was authorized by Congress. You know, they authorized the jet for $222 million, and it costs $55, and they pay it. I wonder if there's a smart lawyer out there that can make that happen. We only have a couple minutes left in this segment, fellas, and I want to turn to something more serious here. Jamie Kloss, this young girl, 13 years old, her parents were murdered, and she disappeared. And nobody knew what happened to her. It was a genuine mystery. Now, when we see these kind of cases come up once in a while where, you know, a couple years ago in Ohio, there was three women who had been kidnapped and they were kept prisoner in that house for years and nobody knew about it. And I can tell you right now, that's still going on. There are people right now that are chained in basements. There are people that are kept in sheds, in underground places that have been kidnapped, that are out there. This is painful. How hard are we looking for these people? Well, apparently this young girl, Jamie Kloss, she found a way to escape. She got out and she ran and she found someone and said, "Please help me. My parents were killed and I've been held captive." And they found the guy who did it, a 21-year-old guy. Apparently went in, targeted her. Right now a lot has not come out about this because I'm sure there's some horrific things that happened to this young lady while she was in captivity. And we're going to find out what the connections were. But they say that this kid didn't really know her parents, but saw her somehow and targeted her and went so far as to kill her parents to kidnap her. Now, the only thing I did see in one report was that apparently he worked at a turkey farm somewhere where her parents both had worked for a short period of time. So, were she in the car one day? And, you know, in law enforcement, you know, there's a lot of things we can talk about. But I bring this up all the time. You know, Dr. Lecter from the Silence of the Lambs, Dr. Lecter said something very true. It's a biblical kind of thing. He says, but you covet what you see every day. And that's how a lot of these things happen. You see somebody that all of a sudden you become asphyxiated on. You know, you can't stop thinking about that. Is that what happened to this kid? Was she in the car one day when mom and dad picked her up from somewhere and this kid saw her? I don't know. But somehow or other, he targeted her, went so far as to kill her parents and kidnap her.
You had mentioned that he worked at a turkey farm. Well, he only worked there for one day.
One day.
One day. And he focused on her. And then he quit, and he told her parents that he was moving from the area, according to the company there that employed him. And, you know, it's just amazing. For 88 days that this girl was sequestered, and nobody saw her. Today, when he's got to clothe her, feed her, and Lord knows what unspeakable things that he may have made her do or did to her. There's got to be some way that somebody saw something. But unfortunately, those 88 days went by. And
if she didn't get away, she'd still be there right now.
Yeah, and she got out on her own volition. She was that brave a kid that just went out, and she was found with oversized shoes and hardly
I guess whatever she could take
clothes
to get out and go.
Yeah.
I think my closing thought here is going to be at the end of this segment here is that we know there are other Jamie Clauses out there. We know they're out there right now. You know, not all these people that are missing are just runaways. We know they've been taken. And unfortunately, we're going to read in the paper again before you know it that someone else is found, someone else is recovered, and they're right in our midst. So how do you do it? If you see something that looks strange going on somewhere, if you see something that doesn't look right, you got to tell somebody. I mean, your point, Bill, is that somebody had to see something with this girl. I mean, he had to bring her in. What did he do? Did he drug her? Did he drag her in so she wouldn't scream and fight? Who knows what happened? Mm-hmm. But somehow or other, he got her from her parents' house to where he was keeping her. And he's right. He had to control her for those 88 days. There are other people in that position right now, and everybody should say a prayer for them and hope that we can find them and bring them home. Yeah. So thank you for listening this week on Chasing Justice. I want to thank the guys in the neighborhood. This has been great. We went up and down and around here with a lot of different stuff, and it's fun. It's fun to be here. It's fun to be part of, Chasing Justice. It's fun to be part of the America Out Loud Radio Network. I want to thank you all very much for listening. Don't hesitate to give us an email, jpangaro@americaoutloud.com. And until then, be part of the solution and not a part of the problem. See you next week.